Moby Dick, Disc 9.
It was at this point, gentlemen, that enraged by the defection of seven of his former associates, and stung by the mocking voice that had at last hailed him, and maddened by his long entombment in a place as black as the bowels of despair, it was then that Steelkilt proposed to the two canallers, thus far apparently of one mind with him, to burst out of their hole at the next summoning of the garrison, and armed with their keen mincing knives, long, crescentic, heavy implements with a handle at each end, run amuck from the bowsprit to the taffrail, and if by any devilishness of desperation possible, seize the ship. For himself he would do this, he said, whether they joined him or not. That was the last night he should spend in that den. But the scheme met with no opposition on the part of the other two. They swore they were ready for that, or for any other mad thing, for anything, in short, but a surrender. And what was more, they each insisted upon being the first man on deck when the time to make the rush should come. But to this their leader as fiercely objected, reserving that priority for himself, particularly as his two comrades would not yield, the one to the other in the matter, and both of them could not be first, for the latter would but admit one man at a time. And here, gentlemen, the foul play of these miscreants must come out. Upon hearing the frantic project of their leader, each in his own separate soul had suddenly lighted, it would seem, upon the same piece of treachery, namely, to be foremost in breaking out, in order to be the first of the three, though the last of the ten, to surrender, and thereby secure whatever small chance of pardon such conduct might merit. But when Steelkilt made known his determination still to lead them to the last, they, in some way, by some subtle chemistry of villainy, mixed their before secret treacheries together, and when their leader fell into a doze, verbally opened their souls to each other in three sentences, and bound the sleeper with cords, and gagged him with cords, and shrieked out for the captain at midnight. Thinking murder at hand, and smelling in the dark for the blood, he and all his armed mates and harpooners rushed for the forecastle. In a few minutes the scuttle was opened, and bound hand and foot, the still struggling ringleader was shoved up into the air by his perfidious allies, who at once claimed the honor of securing a man who had been fully ripe for murder. But all three were collared and dragged along the deck like dead cattle, and side by side were seized up into the mizzen rigging like three quarters of meat, and there they hung till morning. "Damn ye!" cried the captain, pacing to and fro before them. "The vultures would not touch ye, ye villains!" At sunrise he summoned all hands, and separating those who had rebelled from those who had taken no part in the mutiny, he told the former that he had a good mind to flog them all round. Thought upon the whole he would do so, he ought to, justice demanded it, but for the present, considering their timely surrender, he would let them go with a reprimand, which he accordingly administered in the vernacular. "But as for you, ye carrion rogues," turning to the three men in the rigging, "for you I mean to mince ye up for the tripots." And seizing a rope, he applied it with all his might to the backs of the two traitors, till they yelled no more, but lifelessly hung their heads sideways, as the two crucified thieves are drawn. "My wrist is sprained with ye," he cried at last, "but there is still rope enough left for you, my fine bantam, that wouldn't give up. Take that gag from his mouth, and let us hear what he can say for himself." For a moment the exhausted mutineer made a tremulous motion of his cramped jaws, and then, painfully twisting round his head, said in a sort of hiss, "What I say is this, and mind it well. If you flog me, I murder you." "Say ye so? Then see how ye frighten me," and the captain drew off at the rope to strike. "Best not," hissed the lakeman. "But I must," and the rope was once more drawn back for the stroke. Steelkilt here hissed out something, inaudible to all but the captain, who, to the amazement of all hands, started back, paced the deck rapidly two or three times, and then suddenly throwing down his rope said, "I won't do it. Let him go. Cut him down, do you hear?" But as the junior mates were hurrying to execute the order, a pale man with a bandaged head arrested them. Radney, the chief mate. Ever since the blow he had lain in his berth, but that morning, hearing the tumult on the deck, he had crept out, and thus far had watched the whole scene. Such was the state of his mouth that he could hardly speak, but mumbling something about his being willing and able to do what the captain dared not attempt, he snatched the rope and advanced to his pinioned foe. "You are a coward," hissed the lakeman. "So I am. But take that." The mate was in the very act of striking when another hiss stayed his uplifted arm. He paused. and then pausing no more made good his word, spite of Steelkilt's threat, whatever that might have been. The three men were then cut down, all hands were turned to, and sullenly worked by the moody seamen, the iron pumps clanged as before.